This is a spiritual reading being given for Ineke Jansen van Holden in Victoria, Australia, on Saturday the 18th of October 2025 by John Rawson. We stand within the hall of memory. And the book of the soul is given into our hands. The book of the soul, Ineke, is a metaphor. It represents all the incarnations which your soul has entered into since the beginning of its time on this earthly plane. And the book of the soul represents the uniqueness of each soul. So no book is ever the same. And the cover of the book is an expression of some of those unique qualities that the soul brings with it. And because they are unique to that soul, gifts, talents, if you like, expressions, they will be expressed again and again in most of the incarnations that soul experiences. The first thing that we note is the colour of the cover, and this is a bit difficult to describe. It's a deep gold in colour, and it's very old. It's like an old illuminated book, an old illuminated manuscript from the Middle Ages. And the colour indicates the quality of the soul. It's gold because it came from the sun. And as you would know, different souls come from different planetary spheres of consciousness. The souls that come from the sun are the Melchizedek souls. So therefore, from incarnation to incarnation, that person, that individual, that soul, will endeavour to express the Melchizedek priesthood from life to life. Not necessarily, of course, as a priest or a bishop or a minister or anything like that, but the qualities of that priesthood will be expressed. And the quality of the Melchizedek priest is that they light up the world. And of course they light up the world because they are beings of the sun, the great luminary. So therefore, from incarnation to incarnation, we shall expect to see that in some way these incarnations are to do with creating light in the world. And of course we're human beings, so we often don't succeed. Sometimes we succumb to the darkness instead of overcoming it. And this has been for you a sort of the end of one phase, one cycle of lives, and you incarnated in order to reclaim, so to speak, your priesthood and to reaffirm your connection with the order, so that in incarnations to come, as you begin a new cycle, you will be associated with those individuals with whom you have established relationships, particularly on the priestly level, and with whom you have established connections in this incarnation. The second quality of the cover of the book is a word or a phrase across the top like a title, and I don't have an English word. The word as I see it, or the name as I see it, is Aquanarama, which if I were to put into English would be something like the god of the eagle, or it would could mean the gift of the eagle's wings. And what that will mean is that you are only the highest is required from you, so that in this incarnation you have not only had what I would call an earthly job, even if it's being a priest of the Netherlands Center, that would be the earthly job, but it's more that you have been asked to lift, to raise, and to refine your consciousness. And this is a process that starts particularly about the age of 50, the, as you know, the end of karma. By the time you get to about the age of 50, you have really balanced that karma which the soul incarnated to particularly repay. And then for the next 7 years, so that's 7 or 8 years, so that's about the age of 56, then the soul is given a new task. And then from about 56 to 63, another task. So that you are in the third phase after the completion of karma. And so over the last few years, you should be in the process of releasing some of the work that you've been doing, so that you can move on. And one might say, well, when do we get to retire? And in my experience, a priest never retires, and not until the brotherhood retires them into spirit. So do not worry, there's a lot of work still to be done. Then the final aspect of the cover is a little picture in the middle of the cover. And what this shows me is a scene of boats, sailboats, boats with sails up, some big, some small, and they are being blown away from the land. And that represents a very momentous point in your cycles of incarnation, because it represents an incarnation at the end of Atlantis, the Atlantean period. So it's about 30,000, 40,000 years ago. And here you were a priestess, an oracle, I think you'd call it, in the Atlantean Sun Temple and associated here with the priest who is in this incarnation is the being that you know as Robert John. And it was decided that when people left Atlantis to escape the earthquakes, the volcanic eruptions, the fact that the island was going to sink, that was known. And yet you and Robert elected to stay behind because you were the last priests of the Sun Temple. And you needed to be there to see the end of that temple so it could be reborn in a later phase of Earth evolution. And when the wave, the great wave, came over the walls and into the fields and the collapsed upon the temple, then you both died together, having sealed the temple off. And how can I put it? I think that's all I can say on that. And when you die in a sacrifice with someone else, you each sacrifice your life for the other, then it creates an unbreakable bond, incarnation after incarnation. And I suspect that you would gladly lay down your life for this person again if it came to that. The reasons why you've been separated and put on different sides of the earth are interesting, and we shall come to that. But that particular incarnation stamped you from life to life, so that from life to life you would follow the Christ impulse, you'd follow the and facilitate the incarnation of the Christ into this earth firstly, and then you were there, as I think you know, at the crucifixion. Well, I think we'll open the book. And the book opens to the current life, of course. The book, as I see it open, it's got a left page and a right page. And on the right, the soul depicts itself in colour. And these are the colours of the aura. And thank you for sending the copy of the aura that Reverend Mario did, because actually it hasn't, as I see it, it hasn't changed greatly, but you'll be able to pick up the changes that I see. The first two colours, however, remain the same, and that's very unusual for them to change once they've been established in life. So the first colour, as we see it, is light orange. It's a very light orange. It's sort of lit up with almost a golden yellow. And you don't need me to tell you that orange is the colour of Christ, colour of the individual, of individuality. And that means that people who have orange as a first colour are going to need to assert their individuality in this incarnation, it sometimes makes difficulties growing up, because that a child with that colour coming into manifestation is never going to follow the crowd, never going to find it easy to relate to the way most people view the world. Perhaps you would have felt in that English saying, a square peg in a round hole, or phrase Mario liked, a stranger in a strange land. It's as though you don't vibrate to the same wavelength as the rest of the world. And that is because Christ doesn't vibrate to the wavelength of the world. In fact, the vibration of Christ enters into the world and creates thunder, peals of thunder, lightning, earthquakes. It's a very uncomfortable energy, and if you carry that orange through the world, then I don't think you'll ever quite be happy with life. There'll always be something that you need to strive for within life. There'll always be something you need to perhaps fix or perhaps resolve within life. Although it's a lovely colour, it does have also a lot of challenges with it. Because it's a combination of red and yellow, so that the emotions are there. It can be very emotional. But because the yellow is mixed in with the red, it can make it very hard to be objective about self. It's as though you're going to think with your emotions, and you're going to feel with your intellect. Often it gives a sort of philosophical bent of mind, because people with that orange, which has got a sort of restlessness about it, are never satisfied with conventional, standard explanations and understandings. They have to know for themselves. They have to find out for themselves. We'll come back to that. The second colour, still the purple, strong purples. And again, you would know this, purple, the colour of the priest. And purple and orange combination, it's very connected with the order of Melchizedek. Now, around outside the first two colours is what I would call a light blue. That the I don't think you had that in the previous reading, but because you've spent a long time, a good number of years, in devotion, prayer, contemplation, the blues have become intensified as a third colour. And it's interesting they're not a deep blue. You still have the deep blue, by the way, around the legs and the feet, which means that you will always endeavour to walk in a spiritual direction. that's where you're always going to go. But the light blues indicate a lightening of spiritual consciousness. It indicates that one can find enjoyment, laughter, play. It's sort of got almost a playful sense, which probably doesn't sound quite right when you're thinking about spirituality, because we think spirituality should always be serious and focused on being good people and having deep mystical experiences. But the light blues say that you can play, you can use these qualities to be with other people, to be sociable, to lift people up, to make them feel at ease. Greens, strong greens from the shoulders. Rose. A lot of rose, especially around the head. When you have rose there, around the head, inside the head, it indicates someone who's not an intellectual, in the sense that life for you is not about academic thinking and logic and rationality. Life should be about beauty, intuition, inner knowing, tapping into the connections that spirit makes. It's a really difficult color, by the way, to have in that area, because it makes it much more difficult to be objective. For that you need the yellows, but in your case the yellows have been tied up, tied into the reds, and created the orange first color. So it makes it more difficult to stand back. The vortex, an orange, but it's a different colored orange. It's a deeper orange than your first aura color. And the vortex indicates energies that are entering into the thinking, entering into consciousness from spirit. And since it's the orange, again, it's as though you're getting a second shot, a second infusion of that Christ conscious, Christ thinking. And over the next 7 years, that I think will mean that a new revelation of Christ will enter into consciousness, which is, I think, one of the questions that you've asked. The influencing colours above the head, light blues, below the feet, light greens. And the influencing colours are not part of the aura, but they are gifts, if you like, given from the spiritual world to assist in your path, next steps in this incarnation. Let's come back to the first aura colour. Although before I do that, I've got to give you the symbol of the over-self. Symbol of the over-self, as we see it, is a microscope. You're peering through a microscope at something. We'll come to the meaning of that later. And there are other symbols in the aura as well. A lamb standing beside your left foot, your left leg. There's a star above a doorway in front of you. And there's an angel holding a gate on the right-hand side. And these images represent energies that are in your aura, indicating past, present, and future. On the left-hand side is the soul's purpose, or the way it describes its purpose to me at this point in time. It does it in a little verse. But I won't give that now because it's not standing clearly there for me. So we'll leave that till later in the reading. But I think we should come to the colours, some of the colours. And each colour derives or is an expression of previous incarnations. And I think that we will begin with the first colour, the orange. I think we'll go to the incarnation of the crucifixion. And you were in the crowd there. You were not, you knew Jesus, you followed him. You were not one of the 12 apostles, although you knew the disciples. And when the three women, the three Marys, at the cross, you stayed back within the crowd. You didn't want to be seen, and you were afraid of what might happen if the soldiers spotted you. And that that created within you a sense of shame and remorse that followed through many lives. And it enters into consciousness in this incarnation as a feeling that you haven't done your best, a feeling that you can never live up to expectations of other people. Well, why should you live up to expectations of other people, by the way? And yet, you know, when you look at it, I'm going back to that incarnation of the crucifix at the cross, you did the right thing. You did the prudent, cautious thing in that life. You did not make yourself a target for the negative energies. You were not to know that the people who did attend the crucifixion, who were not afraid to go up and be at the cross and watch the death of Jesus and experience the blood and the flies and the smell, it was associated with that terrible event, that they would be empowered by their proximity to the cross, so that because you didn't go to the cross, you missed out on that empowerment and that being drawn into the inner circle. But nevertheless, you still retained your connection to the disciples, and many years later, when the disciples were sent or decided to go to different places, you travelled with the disciple Thomas. And you travel to India, which is interesting. You had a deep relationship to this particular disciple. But although you wanted to have a physical relationship in that incarnation, the Thomas rebuffed you and actually got very angry with you and threatened to send you away. So in the end, instead of following Thomas and being part of the ministry, you left him and you travelled back to Palestine. Now, because you walked away from Thomas, that disciple, you are now separated from them, even though there is this incredible soul connection. And it's interesting that Thomas is remembered as the doubter, because now this individual has within them despite the fact that they are Christed and they have tremendous spiritual power, they also carry within them a self-doubt. That is, they doubt themselves. If you doubt someone else in one life, especially if you doubt Christ, then it's going to come back on you in a later life that you will doubt yourself, you'll doubt your ability, you'll doubt your strength of leadership, you'll doubt all sorts of things, and you'll doubt your relationships with people. And so that in this incarnation, even though this person is also very clairvoyant, their perception in certain directions is sealed by self-doubt, if you can follow that. Now, of course, how far that persists, I cannot know, because that's up to that individual, whether he will overcome that inner lack of trust, if you like, that doubting of self, or whether he will have to come to terms with that in a future life. Mm. had an incarnation in Germany, I think about the 14th century, where you were in the same abbey, convent, as Hildegard von Bingen. And you were one of the nuns in that convent. And you participated in the singing and the ritual liturgical dance and the masks, M-A-S-Q-U-E, the little plays that were put on. And you also painted. You were very good with but you worked also in a sort of something like a laboratory, a chemical laboratory, where you mixed ingredients for paints and dyes, for supplies for creating illuminated manuscripts, but also for creating beautiful colours in stained glass. So in this incarnation, you should have an artistic talent in it. You should be able to perhaps draw or paint. And with the greens from the shoulders, you should. There's an incredible musicality there as well that I hope you have expressed in this incarnation, particularly through the voice, through speaking, but also through singing and using the voice with other people, getting together perhaps in choral settings or small groups of people singing. He or she who sings prays twice, as the Benedictines said. So it's really great if you could express vocally within this incarnation. Incarnation in Egypt. About 2,000 years before Christ, and here you're in a male body, and your king, I think that's the term, you're in Egypt, you're a king, and you've married to your sister, which was not uncommon in that particular dynasty. And again, the association here with the soul that you know as Robert. And that was a partnership where you were in charge, but you were also initiated into the temple, the Egyptian mysteries, because the king was required to be an initiate or have at least the priestly training. It also gave you a certain clairvoyance, so that you could do two things. First of all, you could see in your mind, you would have pictures appear in your mind of places that were far distant, and you would know if there were incursions into the border. And the other ability that it conferred was the ability to see truth in the souls of others. In that incarnation, you had a concubine, a mistress, and you fell deeply in love with this person, and you betrayed your relationship with your wife, so that in misusing the sexual power, the sexual energy that you had, you also lost your clairvoyant gifts. And in this incarnation, you will again have the yearning to be that ruler, but you won't be in charge this time. Someone else is going to be in charge. And you may have a yearning to get that initiate spiritual relationship back in your life. But again, that's that has not happened. So the best way that I can see you moving forward in this incarnation is to accept the love that is there, but you will come to a point of acceptance that the greatest way to express this love is to allow this person to be who they are, which means to be who they are with their flaws. And perhaps one of the flaws is that they don't recognize the same love within themselves for you. And that's, in that situation, the acceptance of the other, even the acceptance that the other will not experience you the way you experience them, that's perhaps something for you. That's a gift that's been given to you. And as you can see, it is closely entangled with different incarnations with this particular individual. Now, in the end, the energy that you feel within the heart is an expression that the heart has been blocked. Even though you've been in love with people, you've loved different people, we know you love your husband, we know you loved your mother, all this love that's there, it has been blocked. It's as though a seal was placed upon the heart. But now, because of the fulfillment of your contract with the, I think I'll call them the Brotherhood, to keep Christ expressed within the Dutch centre, and it was very important that this light be kept shining there for many years now, because you were faithful to that. You fulfilled your contract, you fulfilled that task, and now the plug is, so to speak, taken out of the heart, and so the heart feels more intensely, more deeply perhaps than it's ever felt before. The heart needs to be able to circulate, I think, is the term for that energy. And it first circulates it to the adrenals. If you can imagine a spiral, there is an unwinding here of the energy. It's like a spiral galaxy unwinding. So it unwinds into the adrenal center, which, as you know, is the emotions, where the astral is at work. And so you'll experience for a while untenable, powerful emotions within your life. And then if you imagine the spiral continuing, it passes through the throat center. And that's a challenge to the will. That's a challenge to distinguish between fact and fiction, between reality and fantasy. And the will always operates in these choices. That's why the symbol is Michael holding the sword, that you get to make decisions that will reinforce your will. And I would think that this is probably where you're at present, that you have to take this time poised on the cusp between now and eternity and make decisions that will take you forward, not just into the rest of this incarnation, but into the future. The spiral will continue to unfold, and it will unfold next into the etheric center, the Leiden, as Mario called it. And when that happens, then the memories awake even more strongly, which again is probably happening at present, that what you experience, for example, in your relationship and the feelings you have towards Robert, is a powerful awakening of very deep memories from the past. And sometimes the etheric forces, the memories become so strong that they become independent. They are like the characters of their own. Carl Jung called them complexes, because they seem to act under their own power, their own motivation. But in this phase, your task is to integrate the memories, bring them to the surface, allow them to come to the surface, and allow them to dissolve. Allow that energy to dissolve and diffuse so it becomes part of your whole being. The spiral continues to the brow center. And if you are able to look with clarity at those memories as they awaken and say, that was who I was, that is who I was, but it's not who I am now. And yet I value and celebrate these memories that come to me. And then the reality will open, the complete clairvoyance will click open. And you will see for yourself what's going on. And one more turn of the spiral will bring you to the gonad center. And that's the center that takes most of us many years to get together, to harmonize and to unite. And then from there, of course, the spiral finishes at the crown center, the opening, the reconnection with spirit. I think now we're going to move to the earth. And the verse is on the left-hand side of the book as I see it, and it's about life's purpose. And the title of the verse is The Wings of the Eagle. And the first line reads, "To walk with eyes on the ground." To search. And the second line reads, "To lift one's eyes up and perceive the greater." And the last line reads, "To fly with the wings of the eagle." And what that means is that when you came into this incarnation, you're walking with your eyes on the ground, so to speak. Well, who doesn't? And you're looking for a purpose and for a job, perhaps, and for relationships. You're doing all these young things, and it's all it's all about growing up, maturing. But there came a point in your life when you looked up and you saw something much greater, and you knew probably straight away that this is what you wanted to do with your life. And however that came to you, that was a vision of Christ. When you looked up and you saw the greater purpose, that's the light of Christ shining through the fabric of life. And perhaps it came through the experience of meeting a teacher. Perhaps it came from realizing that you could be part of the work. Perhaps it came when you first had your first meeting with Robert John. But there was a sense in which you changed from looking down to looking up, from being limited to starting to dare to live beyond the limits and to experience that the courage and the daring and sometimes the frustration of trying to follow this connection with Christ. And then the last part of this verse, the last part of this incarnation, to fly with the wings of the eagle. And that means that having done your preparation, bringing in the old memories, and then being confronted with the Christ within your life and what that would mean for you, then because of the release of the past, the only way to make sense of that is to not try and walk around and analyze things and say, "Oh, this is this and that's that, and this is how I feel, and this is how this person feels, and they say this and I say that." No, that's living on the ground, isn't it? What needs to happen is that you've been given the wings, so you can fly, you can lift yourself higher, and the higher you go, the more sense everything makes. And Inika, I think that you've been given those wings, that you are getting ready to launch. You're still, well, as I see, you're sitting on a wall, which eagles like to do, apparently. And you're scanning the landscape, but you haven't got a very good view yet. When you get higher and higher, you will be able to see more and more. And that brings me to the symbol of the over-self, which is the individual looking through a microscope. And what a microscope does is enlarge the very small. Well, you don't want to really spend your time poring over this examination of minute things within your life, because that's not what life is about. So what you are going to do is that you are going to take those wings that you've been gifted with, or the soul's been gifted with, and you're going to take flight in the next 3 to 4 years. And eagles, you know, eagles fly when they start their flight. They fly in circles or spirals, and it goes, the spirals widen as you go up, and it's a reflection of the spiral opening of the energies within the spiritual centers. The lamb in the aura on the left represents the fact that you've always walked with Christ. You came in to walk with Christ. You will walk with Christ to the very end of this incarnation. The symbol at the front shows a star above a doorway. And it's an old doorway. It's like an old cloister or a church, a cathedral doorway. And you are getting ready to walk through there. And as I see through that door, there are arches, and it goes on for quite a way. And yet you're leaving the cloister, you're leaving the old structures behind, and it will take quite a long time before you walk through all the reminders of the past, all the old supports, all the old structures, until you emerge into the light at the end, the real world. And then on the right hand side, there's an image of an angel. And what that really means is that you will come to unite with your spiritual self for the rest of this incarnation, really. It's wonderful to have so much love, that there's love to go around for not just one person or two people or many. And Reverend Murray once said, in fact he said it to me, that he or she who loves much is forgiven much. And it's not important to the high spiritual beings who watch us and guard our path whether we love someone outside normal boundaries, whether there's something transgressive about that love. They don't care about that. They just care for the motivation. That's what they see. Pours something that's light into the world. The fact that the object of this love is on the other side of the world is significant, because love always forms a connection, and your side of the world and our side of the world are going to need greater connections in the years to come. This is a difficult time in the evolution of humanity, and more humanity needs the few souls who exude light, because that light needs to shine in the darkness, even though the darkness does not understand it. The only thing you have to do, I have to do, all the priesthood has to do, is to shine. And if we do that, then we provide choice within the world, then we provide perspective, we provide illumination. And if we can make those choices ourselves, then we provide a pattern to humanity. And if you're willing to shine that light, to take the wings that have been given to you, to rise to the heights, then the world might just get through the next 10, 15 years. And that would be a great task. So shall it be.